Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, the coaching carousel in the SEC is in full motion. Vanderbilt has hired Clark Lee, a move that was sort of expected there, the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, Vanderbilt alum. But something that was maybe not quite as expected is on Sunday, Auburn fired Gus Malzahn after eight seasons coaching the Tigers. Auburn never had a losing season under Gus Malzahn. He beat Nick Saban three times in eight tries, more success than his SEC peers could say. But last couple years, Auburn seemed to be treading water under Malzahn, and so they paid him $21.5 million, or will pay him $21.5 million in his buyout to go away. What did you think of Auburn's move on Sunday to make a change?
I was a little bit surprised, but since it is Auburn, I couldn't be too surprised. I've been observing Auburn's actions for a long time, and they're quicker on the trigger than any SEC program. They're the least patient, the least understanding. They just want to win. They want to win as much as Alabama. They don't like sitting there in the same state and watching Alabama count national championship trophies. You know, you go back to Gene Chizik. He won a national title in 2010, and two seasons later, he was done. I don't know if that would have happened anywhere else in the SEC. He just didn't get any credit for that title. So I couldn't have been too shocked by it. Still, you look at what Gus Malzahn's done. You look at it, it's best observed, I think, from a distance when you just look at the numbers. He's competing against the number one program in America in the same state, and he's competing in the toughest division in college football. And he won about two-thirds of his games. Now, what he didn't do, he came awful close to doing in his first year. Comes within a play of winning a national championship. That probably wouldn't have made any difference, though, the way Auburn thinks. They'll, I guess, try and find somebody better, but he did a pretty good job there, I thought.
And, of course, the reason this is of so much interest to Tennessee, or even more interest to Tennessee, is because Jeremy Pruitt, in his own right, is an embattled coach and helped his cause by beating Vanderbilt, or I guess more accurately, didn't hurt himself by beating Vanderbilt. I'm not sure how much a win over winless and depleted Vanderbilt helps Jeremy Pruitt's case. But in any event, he didn't damage himself further. But, you know, if there was a thought that all Pruitt needed to do to keep his job was beat, just don't lose to Vanderbilt, and he's coming back next year. And I thought, you know, that very well could be the case, then I think Tennessee would have put it to bed after Saturday's game. I mean, there's no reason with signing day this week to let that linger out there after he beat Vanderbilt. If you know 100% he's coming back next year, to me, I see no downside in just saying that and putting an end to this. And so this suggests to me that it's not totally decided. I asked Jeremy Pruitt Monday during the press conference whether he'd received any assurances from Philip Fulmer that he'll be back next season. Pruitt said, you know, he's just got his head down working, going to practice, getting his team prepared, and that's not a conversation that has happened, and that he'll have that conversation after the season. And so, you know, it was a little bit of a deflection, but it was not anything that suggested to me that Pruitt believes 100% he's back next year, and Tennessee hasn't stated that either.
Well, here's the thing you have to remember. In all things football, you can pretty much count on Tennessee handling things clumsily. It's got a long history of that. We could do five shows. We could do a week's worth of shows on that. Do one Monday through Friday sometime in the summer. We could do that. I don't expect Tennessee to handle it deftly. I think it'll probably manage it about as poorly as you could. I agree with you. If you were going to fire Jeremy Pruitt, if you were convinced you were going to fire him, I don't know what else could happen. If you were convinced you were going to fire him after the loss of Florida, I mean, to me, that's when you fire him.
Or even after the Auburn game. You could have done it after the Auburn game, too, yeah. Sitting at 2-5. Either way, I think
either way, you made your decision. Then you get in the – you start looking for candidates. You get out there and you get in the arena slugging it out with all these other schools that need coaches. But you know what? Here's how it comes across. It comes across as Tennessee really doesn't know what to do. That's how it comes across to me. Well – you know, maybe we should give him more time. Oh, my God, but what if he's 3-7? I know, but look at all the money we'd have to pay him. See, and Auburn just, boom, pulls the trigger. South Carolina, boom, pulls the trigger. Actually, the boom should come after pulling the trigger, but I won't get into that. Here's the thing. What if Tennessee decided it needed to fire Pruitt? And then said, well, we'll just wait till the end of the season. How bad a move would that be?
Well, I think it could go either way, John, because I was in the camp of even if Pruitt lost to Vanderbilt on Saturday, I thought they would let Pruitt go ahead and sign this class. Because to me, it can be really damaging to fire a coach 3 days before signing day. Now, I know you could say, well, if you torpedo one class, so be it. You try to do what you can do in the February signing period and don't worry about it. That's obviously the camp that Auburn decided to go in. But I thought, you know, Tennessee would be more of sign the class, pull the bait and switch on these recruits, and if you want to make a change after the class is already signed, or at least, you know, as many as you can sign in this December period, and then come what may. But also... So I think at this point you're sort of pot committed into waiting until after that signing period if you want to make a change. But because I think you kind of missed the window to make a change otherwise. The window was after that Auburn or Florida game, I think. I mean, how would you make a change now after beating Vanderbilt as we record this on Tuesday, the day before signing day? You know, I think they're in a situation now where they can't make a decision until after the obviously, they can't, you know, fire him 3 days before playing Texas A&M.
But to me, if they do make a coaching change, then they have to do the honorable thing. They have to release these student athletes. If they would like to go elsewhere, then they have to give them that out. They can't hold them to this signing. The backlash from that would be horrible.
I agree. But if you got them to sign, you've taken away their window to sign in December. So that's more what I'm saying is you keep them on the hook longer and give yourself a chance to keep them in the class. You say, hey, wait and see, sure. Wait and see who we hire and see how many of those guys you can keep in the boat.
We're working on Bill Belichick as we speak and fully expect to sign him at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just interesting because, you know, if Tennessee didn't want folks like us talking about the potential for a coaching search at Tennessee, it'd be real easy. You just say definitively that Jeremy Pruitt's coming back next year. Now, we've seen the vote of confidence before. Sometimes can be the kiss of death in college football.
Sure.
But usually, you know, we're not talking about a vote of confidence here. We're talking about if Tennessee had a decision, you know, make your decision clear and be done with it. And again, the fact that they haven't done it means that this conversation is going to linger until Tennessee makes a decision or at least makes its decision known. But with Auburn making a change, John, what do you think that does for Tennessee? Because I could see it increasing the pressure for Tennessee to make a change. You say, well, hey, Auburn just fired a coach who won 2/3 of his games through 8 seasons. Now, I think the argument for keeping Pruitt would be, well, he hasn't had 8 seasons. He's had not even yet 3 seasons. So I think you could make, certainly that's the argument I think Pruitt would be making, is 3 seasons is not enough time. Give me more time. Give me more time, not in a pandemic, et cetera. I think those are reasons that he can wager. But, you know, on the other side is Auburn just fired a coach that won 2/3 of his games, never had a losing season. And while I don't think you should make decisions about your business necessarily as a reaction to what others are doing, I think that's just the reality. People are influenced by that. And so How much do you think Tennessee will be, though? Is this, will they just ignore what's going on at Auburn and say our situation is not like that, or do you think they could feel the pressure?
Well, the track record says they will just ignore it. I mean, they have a long history, as I said, of doing the wrong thing, doing the slow thing, doing the late thing, misreading public opinion. Here's to me what you need to do. You need to do something for your fan base. You need to assure your fan base that you're really serious about winning a championship at some point. I get emails from people all the time wondering if I will live long enough, not me, them, you can say the same for me, if they will live long enough to see Tennessee win a championship. I mean, they that's how they're thinking. It's that dire. They need to show this fan base that we're really serious about winning. We know how the last 13 years have gone, and we're sick of it. We're as tired of it as you are, and we want to bring a championship back to Tennessee. And Jeremy Pruitt isn't doing that.
One of the things you're going to hear, I think, John, if Tennessee sticks with Pruitt, is I think you're going to hear from some folks that, well, this shows that Auburn is more serious about winning SEC championships, contending for national championships than Tennessee. Auburn made a move, and let's say Tennessee doesn't. I think there's, not everybody, I think there's certainly a bigger percentage than some might realize in the Tennessee fan base that would like to see Pruitt get a fourth season. But I think there's also certainly a healthy percentage that wants to see a move. And I think you're going to hear from that faction that Auburn making a change shows they're serious about not just winning seasons, they're serious about trying to contend for national championships. Tennessee not making change shows that they're not. I want to offer my thought on that, and then I want to hear what you have to say. I'm not sure that that's accurate. I'm not sure that Auburn, I mean, we're not talking about Auburn firing Gus Malzahn after three seasons. We're talking about him firing him after eight seasons. And I also think what Tennessee has done in terms of support for Pruitt, I mean, he has one of the highest paid staffs in the country. It doesn't feel like they're sparing expense for football. And I know Pruitt's salary doesn't stack up in a big way as compared to his SEC peers, but that's because the coaching search was so bungled in 2017. It got to the point to where they were hiring Pruitt and there was no reason to overpay him. You know, I think Tennessee would have been willing to pay Dan Mullen or Mike Gundy. They showed that they were prepared to do that by approaching those individuals. So I don't know that I buy that argument, but I'm curious to see whether you disagree with me there and think that you know, it would show that Auburn is more serious about football than winning championships at Tennessee is.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that it does show that. I think you can look at Auburn's history, and Auburn has always pretty much played the game that way. I think Tennessee is just, I've thought this for a long time, Tennessee just kind of muddled around in mediocrity, and nobody over there says, we got to win a championship at some point. This isn't going well. We're losing fans, and they are losing fans, and they're losing season ticket holders, and they're losing credibility. At some point, you got to say, we got to do something drastic. We've got to turn this around. This isn't working. Anybody looks at the Jeremy Pruitt era and sees and thinks, yeah, this is working. We're building towards something special, unless they're being sarcastic. But anybody else that looks at and truly sees that for what it is would say, we're not winning championships with this guy. We've seen enough in three seasons. Yeah, we can give him more time, and he might win a few more games next year and the year after that. But do you really think in 8 years that Jeremy Pruitt will have Gus Malzahn's record? Do you think he will come within one pass of winning a national championship? Do you think he will beat number one teams back-to-back like he did in 17 with Alabama and Georgia? No, there's nothing that Jeremy Pruitt's done that inspires confidence, that makes you think this is going to get better. I just don't see that.
We'll be right back.
Life today is kind of a lot. It forces us to always be on. But every now and then, it's important to just stop, crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light, and chill. Hey, it's Adam for Coors Light. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's made to chill. Coors Light. Coors Light is brewed with a three-step cold process. Cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. The mountains on Coors Light cold-activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection. This weekend is the conference title games for just about every conference. Non-stop, great college football all day and night. It's the perfect time to make sure your refrigerator is stocked with a mountain cold refreshment of Coors Light, the beer that's made to chill. If life's pace is wearing you down, make sure you take a moment, pause, and refresh yourself with a cold Coors Light. You can even have Coors Light delivered straight to your door. Go to get.coorslight.com and find local delivery options. Coors Light, made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John, I want to continue on this discussion of, the fact of the matter is, I don't think there's a ton of intrigue in this Tennessee A&M game now. If Tennessee upset A&M, that would certainly be notable. That would be a feather in Jeremy Pruitt's cap. And I think at that point, it would make it really hard for Tennessee to make a move after finishing with back-to-back wins, including a win over top five A&M. But I want to continue to talk about this situation because, frankly, it's what is on the mind of the fan base is whether to take the direction of the program down one path, continuing with Pruitt, or whether to take your chance with a coaching search and stomach what would be about a $12.5 million buyout for Jeremy Pruitt. And so, you know, when Auburn made a move with Gus Malzahn, I think the immediate reaction was, okay, Auburn is serious about chasing Hugh Freeze. They're going to chase Freeze. They're going to, if they want Freeze, they're going to get him before Tennessee even decides to act. And, you know, just looking at things from afar as we record this on a Tuesday afternoon, the latest dispatches from down in Alabama are that Hugh Freeze is not being seriously considered for this job. Now, obviously, things can change in the coaching search world pretty quickly. But if you're following along with the reports out of the reporters down there covering Auburn in Alabama, it seems like some of the favorites that have emerged for this job are Mario Cristobal and Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator at Auburn. I think that would just be fascinating if Auburn pays Gus Malzahn $21.5 million to go away after he had eight straight losing seasons, and then they promote Kevin Steele, who won 20% of his games in four seasons at Baylor. Now, he's been a pretty successful defensive coordinator, but and a lot of times you do see guys in their second time as a head coach do a lot better than they did in the first time. But I think that would be fascinating to see Auburn do that and try to sell that of, and we just fired our head coach and promoted his top aide.
When Auburn made the decision to fire Gus Malzahn, if you make that decision, to me, you should know who your next coach is. In fact, you probably should have him in the room with you if there's any way to do it. I mean, you just need to be able to hand him a sheet of paper and say, sign here. That, to me, is, you can give Auburn credit, and I do, for being aggressive and wanting to win in championships, but this isn't how you win championships. They're going to spend a lot of money and use a lot of energy, but you don't do it and promote your defensive coordinator. To me, you got to have a big guy on the line. Hugh Freeze is somewhat of a big guy based on what he did at Ole Miss. He's won everywhere he's been. Kevin Steele hasn't done that. Nice guy, good defensive coordinator. I liked him when he was here at Tennessee as a defensive backfield coach under Johnny Majors. But you just go out and hire a defensive coordinator when Auburn's main problem is offense? I mean, that's the main knock against Gus Malzahn. Here's a guy who wrote a book on offense, on tempo, high-speed tempo, spread offense. He wrote a book, and he didn't have a second book. He couldn't. He never evolved from that. His offenses have really regressed. That's the main problem people have with Gus Malzahn. He's an offensive guy, and his offense isn't working. And I can see that criticism. So now you tell me, okay, we'll fix that by hiring a guy that's already here, that's coaching our defense, which is playing pretty well. And for the offense, maybe we'll get lucky and find another Cam Newton. I don't understand that line of thinking at all. I just don't see how you could fire Gus Malzahn without knowing you've got a pretty big name guy on the line. You can get Mario Cristobal, or you can get Hugh Freeze, or maybe you want to really throw caution to the wind and hire Art Briles.
Oh my, we'll save that for podcast for another day. We need a full 30 minutes if we're gonna talk that. But let's take Hugh Freeze out of the equation. I don't want you to necessarily have to answer for Hugh. Nobody should have to answer for Hugh. So just looking at things, all things being equal, John, and if the Auburn job and the Tennessee job were open at the same time, which we don't know if they're going to be. We don't know if Tennessee is going to make a move. And even if Tennessee makes a move, Auburn might have its person by then. They might have its person by the time you're listening to this podcast. But if the jobs were open at the same time, which one to you would be more attractive? And again, I'm not saying if you're Hugh Freeze. I'm just saying if you're qualified coaching candidate X, would you rather be tasked with taking over the Vols, or would you rather take that job that's open right now in Auburn?
Well, I'll look at what happened in Gus Malzahn, and I quickly say I'll take Tennessee. I can win 2/3 of my games playing the toughest conference, toughest division in the country, in the same state with the number one program in America. I got to deal with all that, and I got to win more than 2/3 of my game. No, thank you. I'll go to Tennessee where go 9-4, you're a conquering hero.
Unless you're Butch Jones.
Unless you're Butch Jones. And he was a conquering hero until he went 4-8. I think, Hugh Freeze has a genuine affinity for Tennessee. I think that's a big deal to him. He told Paul Feinbaum that's his dream jobs. Now, through the years, I've figured out that coaches have about 27 dream jobs apiece, and they can plug them in whenever it fits. But I think Hugh Freeze would take the Tennessee job. Thing about Tennessee, you got a great recruiting budget. I'm sure Auburn does too. You're well situated in a region for recruiting. You're close to Alabama, Georgia, the Carolinas, not even that far from Ohio. I just think it's really well located. And then you're the thing in the state. I mean, you're the biggest sports entity in the state. Not just saying college, you're bigger than Tennessee Titans. You're bigger than anybody in Tennessee. You're it. And I think that would really appeal to Hugh Freeze. He can sell that, and I think he would sell it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you mentioned, John, you know, if you're a super competitive guy, maybe you welcome the idea of going to the toughest division in college football. But to me, I think Tennessee's stacked up just as well for success as what Auburn is, and you don't have to play in the West. Now, I know Tennessee's also got a really tough situation where they have to play Florida, Georgia, and Alabama every year. That's not an ideal scenario, but Auburn doesn't have it any better. They have to play in the West every year, and then their crossover game is against Georgia. So, you know, you're not any better off doing that, and you add, you know, annual games against LSU, A&M, and of course, just like Tennessee, they have to play Alabama every year. So, It's certainly not any easier at Auburn. I think it's more difficult. And to your point, you're the number two school in your own state, and I think that's a big thing. You know, I think you look at Texas A&M, same deal there. As much as Texas A&M has going for it, the recruiting base in Texas, the facilities, all the money. Fact of the matter is, they're still the number two school in its own state. I mean, how many SEC schools can you say that about? Yeah. It's just Auburn. Auburn and Mississippi State. That's it.
and that's one reason A&M wanted to get out of the Big 12. Get out of Texas's shadow. I think it's done a nice job of doing that. And I think it would be harder to do that, obviously, at Auburn. I mean, you can win at Auburn. I don't think there's any doubt you can win. The question is, can you win enough? That's what would concern me as a coach at Auburn. Can I win enough? You go to Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. Those programs should be above everybody else. Tennessee hadn't always been above everybody else. That's the problem. But I think a good coach with a healthy-sized ego thinks, I got to go in the SEC East, and I got to beat two teams. I got to beat Florida, and I got to beat Georgia. He goes in the West, and he says, well, I can't beat Alabama often, but maybe I can beat. But then I still got to beat LSU and Texas A&M.
And you got a crossover game with Georgia.
And you got to, yeah. I mean, that's as tough as it gets. And so I would find Tennessee more appealing for that reason. And the thing is, you look at that SEC East. If one of those other two powerhouses, and I use that term loosely because I'm putting Tennessee in the same threesome, but the more elite programs in the division, if one of them's down, as Tennessee's been, look at Georgia and Florida. They look at, well, we got to beat one team. One team. And so let's say Florida fires Dan Mullen and hires Jim McElwain back. Then the Tennessee coach could say, hey, I just got to beat one team. Just got to beat Georgia. Things could happen, and you could be a situation where you only have to beat one team. That's how it was in the 1990s, and that's why Tennessee won a national championship. Had a lot to do with it. You will never have that in the SEC West. So if I'm Hugh Freeze, I would love the opportunity to coach at Tennessee, and I think the feeling should be mutual. Tennessee has an opportunity. I'll campaign a few seconds here. Tennessee has an opportunity to get a caliber of coach that it doesn't normally get, but it's got to seize the day.
Should correct myself, John. I mentioned Mississippi State, Auburn, Texas A&M. I mean, the number two school in their own state. You could also say the same about South Carolina and Vanderbilt. So I should have added those to the list. But point being, there's not that many places you can go in the SEC and not be the number one school in your own state. And Tennessee has that going for it. John, I wanted to close with, believe it or not, with Butch Jones, and just kind of quickly get your thoughts on Arkansas State hiring Butch Jones. It's amazing how it worked out. Butch Jones was willing to be Nick Saban's glorified secretary for 3 years and milk that buyout from Tennessee almost till it was bone dry. The buyout was set to end at the end of February, so with 2.5 months to go, and I don't blame Butch for this. Tennessee put the buyout in the contract. It is what it is. This is what can happen when you fire a coach and you have those big buyouts. And now with the buyout coming to an end, Butch has been hired by Arkansas State. What do you think of that, John? Is Butch a guy that can thrive there in Jonesboro, or is this going to be a move that Arkansas State will regret in a few years?
Well, you look at his track record, and he was successful at Central Michigan. He was successful at Cincinnati. So that tells me a lot of guys have been successful at Arkansas State, so maybe he can be successful. I just think a lot of it is, how does the general populace relate to him? I mean, do they see him as a flim-flam man, a guy, all talk, no substance? Do they see him for what he is? Or do they get caught up in the theatrics and the enthusiasm and 63 strain and the champions of the lives and the five-star hearts and fist fight in a phone booth, all that lingo, all Butch's jargon? And they can say, man, this guy's really enthusiastic. He loves being here. He's our kind of guy. He wants to win here. This is a big deal to him. He can do that. He can make Arkansas State seem like the most important job in the world to him. It wouldn't be, but he could make it seem that way. Now, if they buy what he's selling, I think he could do okay there. I think where Butch will have trouble is getting much above that. You know, I think he peaked at Cincinnati.
That was a pretty comprehensive list of Butchisms there,
John. I did numerous columns on them.
Fist fight in a phone booth. I've forgotten about that one. That's a classic. I think Butch could have success there at Arkansas State. It makes sense to me. We've said on this podcast before that Butch would get another chance to be a head coach. I think we both agreed it would not be at the Power Five level. And if I'm not mistaken, we agreed that he'd be better off as a Group of Five head coach than he would be as a Power Five coordinator. And I never saw a Power Five coordinator being Butch's future.
No, this is what Butch needs to be in a small world. He needs to be in a place where his football program is not scrutinized greatly from outsiders. Look at it, Cincinnati. He was in a pro town. He was in a pro town, and his little world was Cincinnati football. I don't think he got a lot of scrutiny there. I don't think he got a lot of scrutiny at Central Michigan. I don't think the columnist in Jonesboro is going to be making fun of 63 strain like I would. I think that's a better place for him. I think he could find happiness. I think the key for Butch is understanding who he is and where he fits in best and where his skill set can take him. And I think it's taken him there, and I think he needs to realize that he's not going to get the Ohio State job. He's not going on to the New England Patriots when Bill Belichick retires, but he maybe could be a head coach at Arkansas State for a long time.
All right, John, getting close to the finish line. Tennessee will wrap up its regular season against Texas A&M. We'll be back to discuss more. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State. And if you like our podcast, please give us a good rating. John and I do this out of the goodness of our hearts. We're not getting paid any extra for doing this podcast, although we should. But in exchange for that, we would love your good ratings.
That will come up at some point for discussion with the higher-ups, as they say.
Let's schedule a meeting. Mm-hmm.